Before we get started, for those of you who don't already know, today we're launching the Sales Hall of Fame. As you know, there's never been a formal way to recognize sales leaders the way there is for many other types of careers. And as sales has become more and more recognized as a distinguished professional field, we felt that it was time for the people who bring in the revenue to be celebrated for their professional contributions. The first inductees are sales professionals who have inspired and influenced salespeople all around the world. These are leaders who have helped make sales the career path that it is today. The link to the Sales Hall of Fame is in the show notes. The first inductees have given us their best sales tips and some great resources, so come check out who the first inductees are and take advantage of the resources that they've provided. And also, let me know if you have someone that you want to nominate for the Sales Hall of Fame.
Welcome to Outside Sales Talk, where we meet with industry experts to learn the strategies and tactics that make them successful. I'm your host, Steve Benson, and I've helped thousands of salespeople all over the world crush their quota. Today, I'll help you crush yours.
Welcome back to Outside Sales Talk. Today, we have Ian Altman with us, and we're going to talk about why athletes win, tactics to become a sales superstar. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Steve, thanks for having me here. In fact, I think I've been on the show before, so the fact that like a bad penny you brought me back is a mystery.
I actually think you were our very first episode, if I recall.
And people are still tuning in, which is great.
I know, right? Yeah, it's done surprisingly well since your first one. You know, podcast for specifically outside salespeople. So I think people found it to be relatively useful to have experts like yourself giving advice through the lens for outside salespeople. But yeah, it's been fun. I think that was probably about 2 years ago. Maybe we had you on the first episode, but it's been a while.
I don't know. It's your podcast. You should know when it was, but then I don't remember when my podcast started. So it's all fair.
It's a confusing world. Well, let me introduce you again in case people forgot. So Ian is a keynote speaker, CEO, and best-selling author. His business helps B2B companies improve their sales strategy and achieve strategic growth from zero to over $1 billion in value. He's co-authored the best-selling book, Same Side Selling. And you can also find hundreds of Ian's articles in Inc. and Forbes. And he also hosts the popular Same Side Selling podcast. Quite a resume there, Ian.
Well, we hope so. I mean, the things I'm most proud of are the results that I've worked with a lot of great companies that have achieved some pretty remarkable results. And those are the people doing the real work. You know, we can give anybody any ideas in the world, but if they don't execute and implement it, nothing happens.
So true. Well, let's dive into some of your ideas here. So what do salespeople and athletes have in common? And that's not a joke. That's actually a question for you.
Exactly. But it could be part of a stand-up routine.
It could.
It could be part of it, right? Because if your salespeople are scratching themselves and spitting on the floor, that could be a problem when it comes to meetings. So we'll steer clear of that. One of the things is that, and it's something that people don't think they have in common is, so in athletic competition, and for that matter in performance arts, everything else, you have top performers and you have people around the middle and you have people towards the bottom. And those top performers in almost every industry are the people who consistently practice the most and work on their craft the most, except for, you guessed it, the people in sales. So people in sales, you know, you've got high stakes situations, you've got high pressure scenarios, just like athletes have. But so often people in sales might overlook the fact that, well, gee, these other industries, they practice all the time, but we don't necessarily do that.
Absolutely. And what are some things that salespeople could learn from athletes?
Well, so the idea is that if you see these athletes, like the person who is, you know, who will lead the league in batting average, is that the person who practices more or less than other people? Well, gee, they're the best, so they must not, they don't need to practice, right? No, those are the people who are usually the first person there at the practice, the last person to leave the field when they don't have games. They're the first person to arrive And it's the same thing whether you're an athlete or whether it's a musician. So the first chair in the orchestra is the person who practices the most. And the difference is that if you're in a situation where, if I'm an athlete, I show up at a game, and what have I done? I've watched videos, I've watched tapes, I know what moves my opponent is going to play against me. And people in sales show up and say, oh yeah, I'm going to show up for this meeting, but you haven't necessarily thought through, what tactics might I hear from the other side? How do I prepare for those? You know, if I'm a baseball player and I know that the pitcher for the other team has a great slider, what am I doing in batting practice? I'm saying, you know what? Throw me a lot of sliders so I get used to that. So when I see it in the game, I can react appropriately. But instead in sales, people say, oh, no, I'll rise to the occasion. And you know what? Even though I haven't practiced, I will spontaneously become brilliant. And that's a story we tell ourselves, but it just isn't true.
And talk to me about how salespeople can practice. What can they do to practice and hone their craft? And why is that so crucial?
Well, so there are a number of different things that you have to practice. First, there are basic skills. So there are things like, how do we set up a meeting? How do we go through the qualification process? How do we deal with different scenarios that might come up? So for example, I might be talking to someone and say, gee, I know this one situation. I always get faced with pricing pressure at this one point in my presentation. How do I prepare for that and get ready for those situations? The other side is that there are specific methodologies and approaches that people, if you're not comfortable with them, you're not going to use them in high pressure situations. So it's kind of like, if anybody listening plays golf and you took a golf lesson on a new way to play out of the sand, like here's a new bunker shot for you. If you learn that and then you never practiced it, and 2 weeks later you're playing in a tournament and it's a high pressure situation with some friends or colleagues, whatever, you're not going to break out that new shot because you're like, yeah, well, I learned this new thing, but I'm not using it because I haven't practiced it. So instead, what you have to think about is, okay, how do you prepare for that so that when you're in that high pressure situation, it just becomes natural? And so there are different types of practicing that that really can benefit salespeople. And in Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, he talks about how mastery consists of 10,000 hours of practice. And he highlights research on that. And the reality is that since most people in sales are spending zero time, if you spend an hour a week, you'll outperform most of your peers. And we've proven that. So that's kind of an interesting thing for people to see.
Yeah, I think I always advise salespeople, hey, Friday afternoons when things slow down, you know, great. That's a great time to try to hone whatever skill you think you're weakest at right now, whatever, or wherever you think that could have gone smoother this week in that meeting. Like, you know, that's a great time to spend an hour. And there's so many resources available that, you know, that are around out there that you can get access to information and learning from. That you can just spend an hour and get better at something, hone the craft. How can a salesperson practice identifying the best opportunities?
Well, so what you have to first look at is, you have to have an understanding and really step back and say, what makes a great opportunity for our business? And oftentimes what people will cite is they will cite demographic information. Oh, I want any company with more than this number of employees, with so many locations, with this much revenue. And the reality is that if you think about it, it usually comes down to more situational awareness that says, is this an organization that is now growing and adding locations? Is this an organization that now is struggling because of X, Y, or Z? Is this an industry that now has an opportunity that wasn't necessarily present before? So it's thinking about situationally where they're at and really thinking from the perspective of, what problem do we solve for these people? And is that problem worth solving? Because if you're going out and just pitching your stuff, then you're going to be perceived as someone who's selling, not solving. And instead, if you can pivot back from that and say, okay, what are the problems we're really good at solving? And now my job is to go find people and discover whether or not people have that condition that we're good at solving. then I can capture someone's attention, because then I walk in the door and I don't look like someone who's selling. So there's a friend of mine who is one of the world's foremost authorities on body language and nonverbal communication. His name is Mark Bowden. He's based out of Canada, but don't hold that against him. And Mark talks about how our human behavior is such that we look for different stimuli that come at us to determine how we should react. So what have we been taught as human beings when we see someone who looks and acts like a stereotypical salesperson? Have we been taught that those people are an asset to us, or have we been taught that we should avoid those people? And most of us would say, well, we've been taught to avoid those people. Well, so if that's the case and we show up looking like a stereotypical salesperson, the client is trying to figure out a way to hide from us or get rid of us. And they say, oh yeah, why don't you check back next week, which is their way of getting rid of you. But instead, if you said, look, I don't know if I can help you, but here are the kind of problems that we help other businesses just like yours with. If this is something you're facing, I'm happy to talk to you about it. If not, I certainly don't want to take up your time if we can't be of value. Now you've piqued someone's interest that says, wait a minute, they're not desperate for business. They just help people in this situation. If we're in that situation, I got something to talk about. If not, you move on.
That makes a ton of sense. I feel like, you know, in general, practicing isn't that common amongst salespeople. Why do you think there's not more practicing? Why is practicing so hard for salespeople?
Well, your highly trained sales professional has developed incredible mastery of generally identifying excuses for why things don't need to happen. And it's a skill that's honed over time. And so it's, people will say things like, oh, I don't have time. And we know that when someone says, I don't have time, what they're saying is, this isn't a priority for me compared to something else. So, you know, if I've got, with this coronavirus stuff going on, I've got my adultish children, my college age children at home right now. And so, you know, if we ask our son to help with taking out the trash or something like that, he says, oh, I got all this schoolwork to do. I don't have time for that. But he certainly has time if I said, hey, you want to you want me to hold the pads for you so you can work on your kickboxing? Yeah, he'd be into that. Or if it's, hey, do you have time to play Xbox? Sure. But it's generally we identify things that we're not necessarily into or don't want to do. The other thing is that people will say, look, I talk to clients all the time, so I don't need to practice, which gets back to the batting champion in Major League Baseball is the person who practices the most, generally not the least. So just because they don't say, oh, I get good enough, I don't need to practice anymore. Or my favorite is people will say, you know what, it's kind of embarrassing. So if I role play a situation with one of my colleagues, you know, it kind of gets embarrassing. And my response to that is, okay, so what you're telling me is you would much rather screw things up with a live prospect when it matters than with one of your colleagues when it doesn't. And that's just not the case. So the idea is that we want to try and structure it in a way that makes it so that we're getting the most value from the time we spend. And those excuses really need to go by the wayside.
Yeah, I think a general instinct of a lot of great salespeople is they've learned to say no to everything that doesn't directly relate to them making new sales. You know, they're a lot of great salespeople are great at cutting out all the BS in life. And in this particular case, probably that instinct works against them. Cause actually if they took the time to work on their new skills or work on making skills they already have even better, it would actually end up turning into more sales for them in the long run. It would just have a longer payoff period than, you know, maybe prospecting would.
Oh, sure. And when I deliver live courses to people, one of the questions I ask people is I say, okay, so gee, these skills that you've learned today, what sort of impact do you think it would have if you really got good at them? And people will say, oh, we would sell more stuff. The sales cycle would be shorter, this and that. Okay. Well, so how much time, how much efficiency do you think you would gain each week? And people give different numbers. And then I usually finish by saying, okay, by show of hands, how many of you feel that this would save you at least 5 hours a week in efficiency? And everyone raises their hand. I say, okay, so would it be worth investing 1 hour a week? Since you all just said it would save you at least five. So it's not like we're saying, look, it's going to save you an hour, so I want you to spend an hour. It's look, if you know it's going to save you at least an hour a day in terms of productivity and efficiency, and I want you to spend an hour a week to gain that, it's like, you know, if that was the stock market, you'd invest in that 100 times an hour.
Yeah. Stephen Hawking would have something to say right now about our ability to really wrap our heads around the concept of time, because, and certainly, you know, one of the major things that the product that I made Badger does is save salespeople time. But the biggest reason when people don't actually get it, once they've checked it out, the biggest reason is I didn't have time to get it stood up. And I'm always like, oh, but it saves you time if you take the time to set it up. So yeah. It's a simple, I think people are under a lot of time pressure, and it's hard. It's easier to understand investments in money than it is to understand investments in time, because it is like such an intangible.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's just for, you know, my comment to people is, so they say, yeah, we would sell more, we would generate more revenue, this and that. So even if it didn't save them time, it's like, okay, so you're telling me you would shorten sales cycles, you would generate more revenue, but that's mm-hmm. not sufficient. Okay. And you'd save time. All right. Let's say you didn't save time, but all it did was shorten your sales cycle and increase your amount of revenue and in turn your commissions. Would you do it then? Oh yeah, okay. And here's the amazing part though. I still have businesses where I'll go and work with four or five different business units. And three of them are absolutely killing it. They're doubling their growth from the prior year. Their margins are better. Everyone in that team is making more money. And one other group, not so much. And you say, well, so what's the difference? What's going on? No, we all went through the same thing. Okay. And in each group, I say, and you guys are practicing, you're doing this role play, what I call same side improv every week. Oh, yeah. And you get to the fourth group and they go, yeah, well, we're doing it for a while. And then we just kind of stopped. And, you know, I just told people they don't really need to do it because we're already doing okay. All right. And you guys are the group that is underperforming the other three groups in your business, right? Yeah. You think that could have something to do with it? No, I'm pretty sure that's not it. It's like, oh my goodness. Yes, that's it. And it's funny because you'll see some teams, they say, okay, we're going to start doing this. And the funny part is they'll ramp back up. And then literally the manager will reach out to me and say, well, now our team's doing really well. So what do you think it was? I'm like, really? Like, you were doing well while you were practicing. You stopped practicing, things went down. You started practicing, and 45 days later, everything ticked back up again. And you're really asking that question. Wow. And I just think it's because people don't want to say, oh, this is maybe the reason why we're not getting the results we're looking for. And that's why I said at the onset, you know, when I have all these case studies, different companies achieved amazing results, my belief is they could have used almost any system, not just same side selling. They could have used almost any system if they had the discipline to follow through with the process and hold people accountable and practice. And, you know, I've got clients who would say, no, it's same side selling. And I would actually say, you know, I think that you could have used almost any system as long as you had that level of discipline.
Sure. That makes sense. Well, one thing that you said earlier jumped out at me with respect to practicing. And you said that a lot of salespeople would be embarrassed to practice the thing that they're supposed to be so good at already. Yeah. In front of their peers. How can you overcome that objection to practicing your craft? How can salespeople overcome the fear of being embarrassed in front of their peers?
Well, there's some rules that we give people, and the rules are in any round of role play, what we call improv, there are three different characters. So there's the salesperson, there's the customer/prospect, and there's an observer. And the idea is that customer is playing different role each time, and we have a way to randomize that so that it creates some interest each time. At the end of each round, the goal of the other people, their job is to give feedback first about what do they like, and then, and here are all the things I liked, and here's one thing I would suggest that you do differently. And so the idea is that, look, if you're not taking chances and if you're not making mistakes, then you're not learning anything. So if we set that expectation up front, then someone doesn't say, oh, I messed up. It's look, if every time you're doing this, people say, wow, that's perfect, you're not pushing the envelope. It's like they say when people are learning how to ski, and someone skis for 2 days straight, and they're like, yeah, I never fell. It's like, well, you're not pushing yourself then, because part of skiing is falling. The first thing they teach you when you learn how to ski is how to get up, right? Because mm-hmm. the assumption is you're going to fall. And similarly, in the world of sales skills, you're going to make mistakes. So if you make a mistake during a role play, you can learn from that and the next time get better at it. Now, if you make that same mistake with a live prospect, it's harder to recover. Similarly, you can look at it and say, wow, I made this mistake. So how would I recover in that situation? Then a month later, you're with a prospect and you somehow make that same mistake again. You say, well, I know how to recover from this. And you have a way to get around it. So a lot of it's just checking your humility at the door and saying, look, I know it's not going to be perfect and it shouldn't be. And if it is, I'm not pushing the envelope enough. And it's giving that guidance to people that says, look, it's not about afterwards saying, oh, here's all the stuff that I thought you were horrible at. It's pick one thing. And then what we tell people is, look, you're going to get feedback from the observer and from the person playing the prospect. And your answer to them is, thank you. And you can use what they gave you. You can discard it. You don't have to defend it. You don't have to say, well, here's what I was trying to do. Doesn't matter. Just take their feedback, internalize it, and decide if it matters or not.
Can you share some exercises? I mean, this would be really helpful given your expertise. Share some exercises for salespeople to practice their skills.
Sure. And in fact, we have a tool that people can access for free. It's on the Same Side Selling Academy. So if people go to SameSideSellingAcademy.com. It's called Same Side Improv. You'll see it up on the menu on the Same Side Selling Academy site, and it's free. You don't have to subscribe. You don't have to give your email address or firstborn male child. You can just use this tool. It's okay. And the idea is that, so you have these three different roles. You have, and so I feel like it's okay for me to talk about this tool because I'm not charging them for it. People can use it, so hopefully that's okay.
Absolutely.
And you can model this on your own. The biggest complaints that people have is, look, I do this role play with Steve. He plays the same character every time. So unless I'm selling to Steve, this doesn't do me any good. And they feel like they're practicing the same thing over and over. So with Same Side Improv, the idea is that the person playing the prospect turns over between one and three of these, what we call secret cards. And the secret cards are different attributes that the prospect might have. Like, you don't trust vendors. You're using this to leverage your existing vendor. You're afraid to lose control or headcount. You're trying to get free information. You're trying to get the cheapest price. I mean, all these sorts of things that we know people run into on a regular basis. And the idea is that in each round, so we say, look, give it 10 minutes per round, and then you can give feedback to each other for 5 to 10 minutes, which means each round would take 20 minutes. There's three people. Everyone takes a turn, that's an hour, and everyone gets a turn and everyone gets the experience of witnessing three different scenarios. And what we tell people to do is, look, you present a scenario that's a real life scenario. So you say, okay, gee, I'm meeting with this client next week. Here's what they're like. Here's what I'm meeting with. That's your scenario. And then the person playing the customer now has these secret attributes also that further complicate it. And at the onset, you say, here's my goal for this interaction. And then what we advise people to do is use the same side quadrants that we teach that says, okay, in this meeting, you're going to be trying to uncover what the issue is the client's trying to solve. What's the impact to them of not solving the problem? How important is this compared to other things on their plate? What are the results that they're trying to achieve, and who else might be involved? And so the idea is then after the round, people say, okay, here's how well we think you did in getting to those areas. And here's a question that you didn't ask that maybe you could have asked. And hey, we love that you asked these three questions. Well, the interesting thing is the person who learns the most in each round is the observer, because the observer isn't in the moment. They just get to hear everything going on. And that person always looks like a genius. The observer is like, oh, you should have asked this. You should have said this. The prospect should have said that. It's like, well, yeah, because you don't have any pressure on you. You just get to listen in. And the idea is that if you go through that type of scenario, then you start to get different at bats. So if you think about it, if you do that once a week, at the end of a year, you'll have 150 different scenarios that you've worked through. That's quite a bit in terms of an arsenal to call on when you're in a meeting. The other side is that there are certain tactics and strategies that I teach on how do you properly set up a meeting so you don't have surprises in the meeting. On things like, what do you do when someone brings up pricing pressure? There are two different strategies for that. And so we actually have cards for those skills also. So the idea is that it's kind of a random system. So you click on it, turns over a card, and then you practice that skill. And those skills might be a 90-second exercise. But the idea is now you're practicing those skills you have to do on a regular basis. So a lot of the concepts that I teach people, I say, look, initially it feels uncomfortable. If you practice this 10 times, you'd never do it any other way. It'd feel totally comfortable. So if we give you a tool like that, there's a pretty good chance you're going to build that muscle memory and you get really good at it. And it's all tools that you can access from a phone, from a tablet, from a laptop. So it makes it so it's pretty universally accessible.
And is there a way that you kind of structure these sessions to be more effective? Like, are there principles that or a way of doing it that make for a very successful role play session that you can think of?
Yeah. So the first thing is making sure that you have that that objective up front, that you for starters know, okay, here are the three different roles. We have the salesperson, we have the observer, we have the customer/prospect. Then it's, what are we trying to measure? So the feedback becomes applicable. So if I say to you, look, the feedback that I want to get from you is, how well did I address these topics? That's really helpful. If I say, hey, what'd you think? People are going to say, oh, it was good. My turn now? That doesn't help us. But if you said, look, what I'm really struggling with is, a lot of times I struggle when people start bringing up price or how I'm going to bring up price. So I want you to pay attention to that. So you're being very intentional about what type of feedback you're trying to get. And the idea is, once again, not to bicker and try and justify yourself, because it's something that often in sales is like, well, the reason I did that is because of this. You don't have to make that argument. Just let it go. Okay, thanks for the feedback. Let me think about how to do it. And you might say, hey, so if I had asked this question, you think that would have been helpful? That's fine, but don't feel like you have to defend what you're doing, because ultimately what we're trying to get to is, we're trying to practice in a way that's aligned with how customers make decisions.
Tell me, I heard you say this once, talk about this once. What are three questions that every B2B buyer asks when approving a purchase?
Well, so let me preface this by saying that, so when people hear that and they say, oh, well, these are the questions that everyone, according to whom? Well, I've done this research with over 10,000 business executives and CEOs around the world on how they make and approve decisions. And I run them through this exercise that says, okay, someone on your team comes to you, they want to spend $20,000 on this nondescript thing. What are the five questions you have to ask to make an informed decision to either approve or deny the request? Then in groups, I have them narrow it down to their top three. And no matter where they are in the world, no matter what size company they are, they ask the same three questions every single time. The three questions are this, and I'll say them slowly and I'll repeat them, because if anybody's selling in the B2B space, you should know these cold. So the first question people ask is, what problem does this solve? Because if I'm going to spend money on it, what problem is this solving for our business that we need this? The second question they ask is, why do I need it? It's kind of the flip side of the same coin. And the interesting part about that is, if people start with what problems it solve and I ask, what do you mean? They typically say, why do I need it? And if someone says, why do I need it? I say, what do you mean? They say, well, what problem does it solve? So they generally go hand in hand. The third question is, what's the likely result or outcome if we make this investment? So that's the ROI question. Meaning, so if I buy this thing, how is my life going to improve? The value of your solution is the differential between why do I need it, which is the financial impact associated with what problem does it solve, and the likely outcome or result on the result side. So the idea is that, okay, here's this problem I have and it's costing me X dollars, and it's costing me $20,000 a month. And if you solve this, I would gain $10,000 a month. And I would no longer be wasting the 20,000. Well, now your solution is worth 30. So as long as you're charging something less than that, there's a pretty good chance, if the prospect is convinced that A, they really have that problem and that's what the cost is, and B, that you can actually deliver the results. So the three questions are, What problems it solve? Why do I need it? And what's the likely outcome or result? The distant fourth that people come up with is, what are the alternatives? And the reason it's a distant fourth is this. If you're someone who's thinking about making a decision to buy something, and you have a vendor and you're convinced they're in total sync with you about what problem you need them to solve and why you need their help, and this is the vendor you feel has the best likelihood of delivering the best results, that's your vendor. So if you answer those first three questions really well, that fourth question becomes implied. If the way people are selling today is not aligned with those questions, you're lengthening rather than shortening the sales cycle. And so the clients I've helped with really some pretty extraordinary results, they have their finger on the pulse of those questions.
All right. Well, what I'd like to do now is enter the fast question, fast answer section of our podcast, Sales in 60 Seconds.
Perfect.
All right. So how much time should salespeople spend practicing their sales skills each week?
An hour a week. So I can give you a longer answer, but an hour a week, because I can tell you more and there's people that do more, but if you do less than that, you're cheating yourself.
All right. Besides practicing, can you list your top three habits for sales success?
Yep. Know what problem you solve, know why people need it, and know, in essence, what are the conditions or the circumstances for your ideal client or prospect, so you're not wasting your time on the wrong ones.
In your opinion, what's the number one skill salespeople need to be successful in sales?
What's that? No, just kidding. The answer is listening. The answer is listening. That's the number one skill, is asking great questions and listening.
So true. What should salespeople never forget when they're pitching to their customers?
That they buy for their reasons and not your reasons.
All right. If you had 3 minutes with a prospect, what would you say?
First thing I would do is disarm and say, look, I don't know that we can help you just because we've helped other people like you. I don't know that we can help, but here are the three biggest problems that they come to us to solve. And if solving those is important to you, I'm happy to learn more to see if we might be able to help.
Excellent.
We may have actually done that in close to 60 seconds.
Yeah. I think, well, it's 60 seconds each question in theory, but we were on point with that. Boom, boom, boom. That was great. So is an actionable takeaway. Tell me, what should the field salespeople listening today do as a first step to start practicing their skills?
Well, they could make that huge investment and use the Same Side Improv tool at the Same Side Selling Academy for free. So they go to samesidesellingacademy.com and pull that up for free. That's the big investment they could make. The idea is really just practice whatever it is, wherever you're getting stuck, find a colleague, find someone who you have some accountability with and say, hey, look, let's find an hour a week to practice. If you want to split that into 2 half-hour sessions, that's fine, but make it non-negotiable. That says, look, my week is not over unless I've spent an hour practicing these skills. Because I can just tell you that over and over again, the organizations that achieve the best results, that's what they do. I've got a client of mine where they had 2 different business units. One business unit was one of their top performing business units, and the other one not so much. And the one that wasn't really performing that well has had the discipline to practice 1 hour a week every week. And this has been going on for about 90 days. And 90 days later, lo and behold, guess who's now the top performing unit? The group that's practicing 1 hour a week that was one of the bottom performing units and is now outperforming the other people. Well, let's see, did their customer base change? No. Did their products change? No. Did their team change? No. They're just practicing. And so I just can't emphasize it enough. And, you know, let's face it, I'm giving people a tool to practice that's free. So it's not like I make more money if people do it, but the people who use it make more money. That should be incentive enough.
Yeah, well, and I'd say the people that listen to podcasts like this one are probably in the demographic that are far more likely to want to hone their craft. I mean, you don't listen to this because you think I'm funny. You listen to this because the people that are coming on the show are really talented and teach you things. So, well, I'm going to try to summarize the wisdom that you've dropped on us today, in 3 minutes or so. So, first of all, salespeople often find themselves in high stakes situations, just like athletes do. And just like athletes, salespeople need to practice to deal with different situations that come up. Salespeople need to prepare for different situations so that they can respond well when these high pressure curveball type situations land in front of them. Think what problem you can solve for your prospects, and then if and why that problem is worth solving. Only talk to prospects that you can bring this type of value to, and you'll save yourself a ton of time. Salespeople often make the excuse they don't have time to practice, but investing time in practicing will help salespeople increase efficiency and sell even more. As a manager, you need to hold your sales reps accountable for honing their skills and practicing their skills, sharpening the sword. In a sales improv session, practice with people who play the role of a salesperson, a customer or prospect, and have an observer. Get feedback on mistakes and learn how to overcome these mistakes before you meet with real prospects. To lead an effective sales improv session, first, know the three different roles: salesperson, customer, and prospect, and observer. Second, know what you're trying to measure. For example, how well did I address price? Third, thank your peers for your feedback, and you don't have to defend what you did or what you said, because we're all just learning. Business-to-business sellers need to answer these questions to shorten the sales cycle. What problem does this solve? Does my product or service solve? Why do our customers need it? What's the likely result or outcome if I buy this solution? What's the benefit? This is the ROI question, right? What are the alternatives to this product, or this buying this product action in this situation? And that's often that fourth one, the alternatives one, is often a distant fourth question that may just have already been implied. But the first three are the ones that are so important. What does it solve? Why do I need it? What is the result or benefit that the customer gets? All right, Ian, this has been some fantastic information for our listeners. Where can folks reach out to you and learn more about your work and get to know you better?
So obviously the Same Side Selling Academy is one option, and that's where they can get Same Side Improv for free. Also, if they click to log into the site, they can use the code BADGER1, and we'll give them access to a preview of the overall Same Side Selling Academy. So that way they get access to that as well, that has some courses and lessons that might be helpful to them. So just BADGER1 is the code they'll use, and they'll be able to access that. And then, of course, online, Ian Altman, which is just IanAltman. So it's ianaltman.com and Ian Altman on social media.
Awesome. Our very own code, BADGER1. I love it. we'll put that all in the show notes, guys. So you don't have to drive you don't have to write it down in case you're driving. Well, this has been a great episode of the Outside Sales Talk. I really appreciate you coming on here and dropping your wisdom for us, Ian. If anyone listening to the show can think of other sales reps that would benefit from the stuff that Ian's been talking about, share the love and forward this on to them. Take care and be safe out there, guys.